When Buddhism spread to China, it developed into five schools: the Chan School, the Teachings School, the Vinaya School, the Pure Land School, and the Secret School. The Chan School investigates Chan Samadhi, meditative concentration. The Teachings School studies the doctrines. The Vinaya School studies the moral precepts. The Pure Land School practices Buddha recitation. And the Secret School recites mantras. We are now holding a Chan session, so for the time being, we will discuss only the principles of Chan meditation and not the other four schools. Chan translates as thought cultivation because one is always contemplating the matter of meditation. What matter is that? It is simply the meditation topic one is investigating. We look into the question, who is reciting the Buddha's name? This single sentence is the topic of our investigation of Chan. In fact, investigating this topic is another kind of idle thinking. This method is known as fighting fire with fire. We set one idle thought in action to wipe out many idle thoughts. To reach success with this method, we must work at it for a long time. A saying goes, after long-term cultivation, there will be Chan. Investigating is similar to drilling wood. You don't stop until the drill bit makes a hole all the way through the wood. If you stop halfway, you'll lose the benefits of all your early efforts. The first priority in Chan meditation is patience. When you can be patient to the extreme point, you can reach a state of not even one thought arising. When not even one thought arises, you can get enlightened. As the saying goes, take one more step from the top of the 100-foot pole. At that time when you can take yet another step from the very top of a 100-foot pole, the worlds throughout the 10 directions manifest in their entirety. To gain some success, however, you must apply yourself constantly in thought after thought without any laziness or slacking off. A verse in the Song of Enlightenment says, when you suddenly awaken to the Chan of the Tathagatas, the six paramitas and the myriad practices are complete within your substance. In a dream, very clearly, you perceive all the sixfold realms of rebirth. When you awaken, you see all as empty and void, and not one bit of the universe exists at all. Suddenly here means that you immediately understand a principle. As it said, we may awaken to the truth of a principle suddenly, but we must cultivate the specifics gradually. The specifics must be cultivated one step at a time, yet the principle may be awakened to all of a sudden. For instance, after enlightenment, we know there is a well nearby from which we can draw water. Before our enlightenment, we may have heard the sound of a well pulley and a rope for a long time, and yet not have known where the well was located. This analogy explains where the Buddha nature comes from. How do we realize this Buddha nature? There is no other method to realizing it. It can only be realized through Chan meditation. Bodhisattvas use the six paramitas as their method of cultivation. They are giving, which takes stinginess across, moral precepts, which take across transgressions, patience, which takes across hatred, vigor, which takes across laxness, Chan concentration, which takes across scatteredness, and wisdom, which takes across stupidity. Only when these six paramitas have been cultivated to perfection can one become enlightened. We are all now living in the midst of a dream. A verse goes, In life, it's all a dream. In death, a dream as well. Dreaming, we enjoy glory and wealth. Awake, we're back in the gutters. We dream every day, unaware that the dream takes no longer than a quick supper. If we fail to wake up to our present dream, then we've dreamt through it all in vain. In dreams, we see very clearly that there are six paths of rebirth, which are the heavens, the realms of humans, asuras, animals, hungry ghosts, and the hells. Once we awaken, however, and get enlightened, the entire 3,000 world system no longer exists. Why not? Because we are no longer attached to it. When we are no longer attached, all of the myriad creatures in existence completely return to their origin. How could any further trace of self exist? How could any trace of others, of living beings, or of a lifespan remain? None of these exists any longer. Some people, after they learn that the four traces can be made to disappear, won't dare cultivate any longer. They get upset at the idea of there being no more people, living beings, or lifespans. They exclaim, "If there is no more work left for me to do, I will be out of a job." Is it certain that you need to go to work? The idea only ensures that you will continue to be upside down forever. If you can cultivate to the state of being free of the four traces and you can actually sweep out all dharmas and leave all traces behind, you'll certify to the realization of a principle, which is the ultimate reality of all dharmas. It's called, don't set up even a single dharma. Empty out all of the myriad things. This does not mean that you can smoothly discuss this principle on an intellectual level. Rather, you must actually certify to and attain this state. At that time, for you, there will be no further pain. There will be only happiness. For those of us here in the world, if we aren't attached to fame, we're attached to profit. If we aren't attached to wealth, then we're attached to sex. So we find ourselves unable to see through things, unable to put things down. We may want to do so, but in the end, we still can't let them go. Why can't we let them go? Because our smart bugs and our intellectual cleverness are acting up. Due to them, we miss many open opportunities. We let them slip through our fingers, and before our very eyes, we fail to recognize Guan Shi Yin Bodhisattva. Even though Guan Shi Yin Bodhisattva is right before our eyes, we still go running all over looking for him elsewhere. Thus, we are controlled by our upside-down idle thinking. The word investigating in the phrase investigating Chan means to contemplate. What is there to contemplate? We use contemplative prajna. This means to contemplate our own presence in thought after thought. It does not tell us to contemplate others' presence. We should contemplate whether or not we are fully there. If we are, then we have the ability to investigate Chan and meditate, and we can use our skill in cultivation. If we are not there and are indulging in idle thoughts instead, our minds scatter to the wind. Then, even though our bodies may be present in the Chan Hall, our minds have run off to New York for a bit of sightseeing, or perhaps run off to Rome for a holiday. Our minds have gone out to climb the social ladder, so, as a result, we lack self-presence and are not there. When we learn to contemplate with self-presence, we can become bodhisattvas. When we contemplate without self-presence, we are only ordinary humans. When we contemplate with self-presence, we are in the heavens. If we contemplate without self-presence, we are in the hells. Only if we can contemplate with self-presence without our thoughts running away can we practice the profound Prajnaparamita. Being here, with our bodies present in the Chan Hall, our minds continue the investigation without cease. We investigate without interruption. Only this counts as practicing the profound Prajnaparamita and finding wisdom. Only after we have attained great wisdom can we really reach the other shore. The secret formula for investigating Chan is to stick to it by day and night. Keep thinking it over. Think about, who is mindful of the Buddha? We contemplate today and contemplate tomorrow, and every day we are in the Chan Hall practicing the profound Prajnaparamita. We cannot expect to get the actual flavor of Chan in a short period of time. Only after long practice can we know its real taste. When we have the skill of practicing the profound Prajnaparamita, then we can contemplate the five skandhas as empty. The five skandhas are called the five shadows. Skandha means heap or gatherings. Shadows mean blockages or coverings. Why have we failed to obtain self-mastery and liberation? It is because we are covered over by the five skandhas. The five are form, feeling, thought, activity, and consciousness. The skandha of form. Obstructing objects are forms. Things with shapes are forms. Things with distinguishing features. Before we have emptied out this form skandha, we are likely to see forms and be confused by them, or hear sounds and be confused by them, or smell scents and be confused by them, or taste flavors and be confused by them, or feel sensations and be confused by them. If we can empty out the skandha of form, then we can realize the state of there being no mind inside, no body outside, and nothing beyond. Forms include many colors, all of which can dim your eyes so that you can't see clearly. They make us just like blind people. In the Classic of the Way and Its Virtue, it is said, "The five colors blind the eyes. The five musical notes deafen the ears. The five flavors dull the palate." All such states result from being confused by the form skandha. If a person can break through the form skandha and see that the mountains, rivers, the earth itself, and all the buildings on it are empty, none of these troubles will exist. Thus, we say that before the form skandha has been emptied out, one will still be attached to forms. As long as one is attached to forms, he will not have broken through delusions of views. Delusions of views means that when you encounter certain states, you experience greed and love for them. States here refer to pretty forms. When beautiful things appear before you, you may experience feelings of love and craving for them, and then get attached to these things. There are 88 categories of delusions of views, and if one can sever them completely, one then realizes the first stage of arhatship. Cultivators of the way first sever these 88 categories of delusions of views in the triple realm, and then continue to sever 81 categories of delusions of thoughts in the triple realm. Delusions of thoughts refer to letting confusion over certain principles lead you to discriminating thinking. This means that you don't clearly understand certain principles. When one can sever 81 categories of delusions of thoughts within the triple realm, one then realizes the fourth stage of arhatship. The skandha of feeling. This refers to all the many feelings that we experience. For instance, a certain situation may arise. We accept it without ever thinking about it, and we feel it's a comfortable state. An example would be when we eat some delicious food and its flavor makes us feel quite pleasant. This is what we mean by feeling. If we wear a fine piece of clothing and it makes us feel quite attractive, this is also a typical feeling that we accept. If we live in a nice house that we feel looks quite handsome, this is a feeling that we accept. If we ride in a fancy automobile and we feel quite comfortable, this is also a feeling that we accept. In general, all experiences that the body accepts and enjoys are considered to be the workings of the feeling skanda. The skanda of thought. This refers to our thinking process. Our five sense organs experience contact with the five sense objects and cause a variety of idle thoughts as a result. Many ideas suddenly come to mind and then are suddenly gone. Ideas of form and feeling. This process begins with the skanda of thought. The skanda of activity. This refers to a process of shifting and flowing. The activity skanda leads us to come and go, to go and come without end in a constant, ceaseless, flowing pattern. Our idle thoughts compel us to impulsively do good or do evil, and such thoughts then manifest in our actions and our words. The skanda of consciousness. This refers to the process of discrimination. As soon as a situation appears, we begin to discriminate in our thoughts about that situation. For example, when we see something beautiful, we have thoughts of fondness towards it, and when we hear ugly sounds, we have thoughts of dislike for those sounds. All such discriminations are part of this skanda. If someone can break through these five skandas, he can then cross beyond all suffering and difficulty. Such a person will undergo no further disasters and troubles. Why do disasters and troubles beset us? It is because we are still attached to a self and to dharmas. These two attachments have not yet been emptied out. The Song of Enlightenment by Great Master Yong Jia says, "The five skandhas are mere floating clouds, aimlessly drifting back and forth. And the three poisons are only bubbles in foam, rising and sinking on the tides." The five skandhas, in fact, have no nature of their own, just like clouds floating in space. Very spontaneously they appear, and spontaneously they disappear. If we fail to understand this principle and let ourselves be covered over by these skandhas, we will be neither free nor liberated. We should be skillful in cultivation so that when the five skandhas arise, we can break through them. When they come on their own, and when they go, they are free to leave on their own. We need not pay attention to them, nor do we need to attach to them. Greed, anger, and stupidity are just like bubbles in foam on the water. They basically have no actual substance. Born of themselves, they vanish of themselves, and if we don't attach to them, they no longer exist. The Song of Enlightenment by Great Master Yong Jia also says, "Realize ultimate reality, and people and dharmas no longer exist. In that instant, we eradicate the karma of the relentless hell. If I am deceiving living beings, may I fall into the hell where tongues are ripped out for endless eons." Ultimate reality here means the state wherein there are no traces, yet nothing lacks traces. A state wherein we can sweep out all dharmas and leave all traces behind. One is said to have returned to the origin and realized the purity of his inherent nature. In such a state, there are no further people or things that can be known. Both of these are gone for good. One no longer maintains attachments to people or to dharmas. Then, one is said to have realized the principle and substance of ultimate reality. Then, in a split second, one can wipe out completely all of the karma that destined one for the relentless hell. Karma gathered from countless eons in the past can be wiped away completely without a trace. Great Master Yongjia says, "If I am deceiving people with lies, I am perfectly willing to fall into the hell where tongues are ripped out and suffer for an eternity." We here in the Chan Hall must actually go and cultivate. Our work is just like reeling silk off of a cocoon. The work requires us to be patient and to proceed gradually. Only then can we avoid tangling the thread. We cannot try to get clever and invent shortcuts, nor use a scientific, improved method to get enlightened. That amounts to mere idle thinking. If science could bring us enlightenment, the scientists would not forever be painting themselves into a corner, but would have long ago gotten enlightened, and nobody else after that would ever get the chance at it. We needn't build castles in the air, but need only follow true procedures. Cultivate hard and look into who is reciting the Buddha's name. Be patient with your back aches and your hurting legs. When your patience has reached maturity, you will spontaneously become enlightened. A saying goes, "If they hadn't endured the bone-chilling cold, how could the plum blossoms smell so sweet?" Everyone should pay attention to this. Don't be so clever that your smartness obstructs you. Don't be too smart for your own good. Know that one part of work yields one part of skill. Cultivation requires true skill, not mere lip service. To be able to talk about cultivation without really being able to do it is useless. Paying lip service not only does not advance your enlightenment, it becomes an obstruction instead. Thus, a saying goes, "Only in silence is it actually chan." A beam of spiritual light flashes throughout heaven and earth, illuminating it totally. You become identical with all Buddhas of the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time. Why have we failed to realize the Buddha's 3 bodies, 4 modes of wisdom, 5 eyes, and 6 spiritual powers? It is because our worldly idle thinking is simply too dense. It obstructs our wisdom. Idle thinking takes our light away and turns it into ignorance. All day long we do nothing but indulge in delusion, create bad karma, and receive the retributions of unending rounds of births and deaths. The 3 bodies are the Dharma body, the reward body, and the response body. The 4 modes of wisdom are the wisdom that accomplishes what should be done, the wisdom of wondrous contemplation, the wisdom of equal nature, and the all-encompassing mirror-like wisdom. The 5 eyes are the heavenly eye, the flesh eye, which is not the human eye, the Dharma eye, the wisdom eye, and the Buddha eye. The 6 spiritual powers are the power of the heavenly eye, the power of the heavenly ear, the power of knowing others' thoughts, the power of knowing past lives, the power of spiritual travel, and the power of the ending of outflows. When someone puts an end to all idle thinking, he or she can realize states such as these. In fact, these are not esoteric but very natural phenomena and arise from actual spiritual skill. We need not consider these states strange or unusual, for they are quite natural. From beginning this time in the past until now, we have been covered over by ignorance and have not heard the instructions of a good and wise advisor. We don't know the meaning of understanding the mind and seeing the nature. Nor do we know the meaning of returning to the origin. The purpose of cultivating Chan meditation is to understand the mind and see the nature, to return to the origin and go back to the source. We can then obtain liberation and be free of impediments and obstructions. We can leave inverted dream thinking far behind and attain ultimate nirvana.